The following is a Sunday Feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 7, text number 7, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on March 27th, 2011, in London, England.
Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 7, text number 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Matak parataram nanyat kinchirastiranjaya mai sarvam midang protang sutre mani gana iva.
Translation in purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung on a thread. Purport. And there is a common controversy over whether the supreme absolute truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. And this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the absolute truth is a person. That the personality of Godhead is the absolute truth is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvaraha Paramakrishnaha Satchidananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version, given in the Shvetashvartara Upanishad 3.10, Tato yad utataram tad arupam anamayam ya etad vidur amritaste bhavanti atedare dukam evapiyanti. In the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam. But this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3, 8, and 9 substantiate this as follows. Vedaham etang purusham mahantam madityavarnam tamasa parastat. Tam eva viritvati mrityumeti nanyu panta vidyate yanaya. Yasmat parang narupam asti kinchid, yasman naniyo najayo asti kinchid, viksha istabdo devitishchatat yekas, tenedang purnam purushena sarvam. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness. Only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person, because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest, and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated in a silent tree, and he illumines the transcendental sky, and as a tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Bada Kamala Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatanvita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha So, what makes Prabhupada's points even more poignant is the fact that the verses describing the personality of Godhead as personal are verses 8 and 9, which precede the verse number 10, which says Arupam. So if you consider what Vedavyasa has done here, he has first of all described how the Supreme Person, how the Supreme Absolute is a person. Very clearly, in the Sanskrit, Purusham. In verse number 8, he's saying Purusham. In verse number 9, Purushena. Again, Purusha. In both verses 8 and verse 9, the exact word Purusha per person is utilized. So therefore, in verse 10, which follows these two verses, in which he has clearly said Purusha or person, now in verse 10, he is saying Arupam. So the only way you can really deduce an impersonal understanding from this is to ignore verses 8 and 9. Yet, the only way the Mayavadis can substantiate their impersonal description of the Absolute is to take the verses completely out of context. Which is bogus. You can't take things out of context. Everything has to be taken in context. But they have their own version of reality that they want to... A logical version of reality, actually. They want to squeeze out some new version that allows them to become God. You see? They tried to be successful in academics. They flunked out of school. They tried to be successful in business. Their business went bankrupt. They tried to get a job. They got fired. They tried to make it as a rock and roll band, and no one could stand their music. They tried in every way to be successful, and they failed in every single way to be successful, but now they have found the way to be successful, that I am God. You see? It's simply another attempt to be successful. That's all. It's Mayavadi philosophy. Another way to be successful. People embrace this concept. It's a Mayavadi concept. I am God. I read one book when I was a spiritual seeker way back in 1968. I read one book. It was called The Book. And the subtitle was On the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. And in this book it explained that actually you were God. But now you're playing hide and go seek with yourself. You simply have to come out of hiding and be God once again. I tried it for 2 or 3 days. It was pretty good. But then I realized it wasn't really working. So this impersonal philosophy is very attractive, you see. Very, very attractive. You were God. Oh, wow. Well, I wasn't religious before, but if I can be God, all right. I'll believe in God again. I give up my atheism. If I can be God, then I'll accept the existence of God. Actually, this was the whole point of Shankara's introducing Mayavad philosophy. He wanted to bring the atheists back to an acceptance of Vedic wisdom. It was simply an intermediary step in the evolution of Indian philosophy. Is to bring back the Vaishnava Dharma. It's an intermediary step. It was not the final conclusion, and this is substantiated by Shankaracharya himself. Bhajagovindam, 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 Mudha Mate, my dear disciples, you intellectual fools. You simply worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. So the great propounder of impersonal philosophy himself rejected his own teachings and told his followers just to worship Govinda, but they didn't follow that instruction. He thought, this is very nice philosophy in which I can be God. I will take that instruction of my spiritual master, but this one I will ignore. What is that called? When you take one part and you ignore the other part? That is called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya. Half-hand logic. Half-hand logic is not a very practical thing. You know that farmer, he had one hen. And the hen was laying wonderful, wonderful, big, big eggs. These eggs were drawing very nice price in the market. But he had one complaint about his hen. This hen eats a lot of chicken feed. So the farmer thought, I will solve this problem. I'm getting very good eggs from this end, but I'm getting very big expense from this end. I will cut off the expensive side and take the side, the good side, where I make profit. Just see what a foolish rascal he was. He cut off the head of the hen. And then the rascal, he could not figure out why he wasn't getting eggs anymore. So this is called half-hen logic, you see. So these Mayavadis, they are like that stupid farmer, you see. This Vedic wisdom is very nice. I will take this side that I am God. I will take the egg over here. To be servant of God, no. That I will cut off, you see. So what is the result? Aruya kachchena parangpadam tadapadanjiro nadvitsajushna jushmarangriyaha. Even if they attain some degree of transcendental consciousness, patanti adho, bloop, they fall down again. So, why endeavor following some impersonalistic path? And even if you can achieve it by undergoing great penances and austerities, even if you can achieve the impersonal Brahman, or as the Buddhists, they want to emerge into the void, nirvana. Actually, Prabhupada said, That is, they enter in Mahesh Dham, the intermediary place between the spiritual and material worlds. Those who achieve the Buddhistic nirvana enter Mahesh Dham. Even if you go to those places, you see, in Parasna Brahman and Mahesh Dham, if you have no mood of bhakti, you may enter that intermediary zone between the spiritual and material world. But if you have no mood of bhakti patanti adho, you will fall down again into this material existence. You may fly in the sky of Brahman with your little airplane, but when you run out of gas, what will you do? You have to come in for landing once again here in this material world. You see? The impersonalists, the true impersonalists, because of great penances and austerities, that entitles them to some temporary sojourn beyond the modes of material nature. But after they exhaust the result of their penances and austerities, they come down again. See? They have nothing transcendental to sustain them in that transcendental existence. It is bhakti that sustains one in the transcendental existence. Therefore, the great acharyas, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta, they teach this bhakti path. They all teach this bhakti path. Svayambhura Nadadashambhu, Kumaro Kapilo Munu, Pralado Janako Bhishmo Baler Vayasakirviyam. These are the 12 great Mahajanas. And these great Mahajanas, they are all teaching this bhakti path. Bhakti is the essence of existence. Bhakti sustains one in transcendental existence for all of eternity. Don't think that you can achieve transcendental consciousness without bhakti, because transcendental existence is bhakti. In essence, it is bhakti. Devotion. And what does devotion mean? Love. Pure love. Selfless love. That is the meaning of bhakti, devotion. So, if there is pure, selfless love, there must be an object of love also. You see, that is a difficulty with Maiva. They deny the object of love. See, if my parents arranged for me one wedding, they say, "My dear son, it is time for you to be married, and now we have brought one bride for you. You have to spend your whole life now in a loving relationship with this bride." And they say, "Okay, now you can meet your bride, and she is nothingness." Or she is oneness. Well, where is she? I can't see her, I can't talk to her. But you see? How are you going to devote yourself? What would you say to your parents if they arranged a marriage for you with, "Okay, yeah, here she is. She is oneness." "Have a wonderful life with her, son. Oneness. You can't talk to her, you can't see her, you can't touch her, you can't hear her, nothing. But you have to give your whole life to oneness." So this is Mayavadi philosophy, you see. It's impractical. How you can devote yourself to oneness? There's nothing to reciprocate with. But bhakti is very practical. Yes, here is a person, Krishna. He has beauty, he has qualities, he has power, he has renunciation, he has knowledge, he has wealth, he has fame. He has all those qualities and those characteristics that are attractive here in this material world, magnified, unlimited, millions and billions of times. So now you can get rasa. You can't have rasa with Brahman. Rasa is translated as relationship, And it's also translated as taste. You could say, well, there's a big difference between those words, taste and relationship. How rasa could mean both things. Well, if you understand bhakti, then it makes all the sense in the world, because you can't have taste unless there's a relationship. There is no Brahman rasa. It is a rasa. It is tasteless. If you want taste, then you must have relationship. And if you want to have a relationship in which you can give yourself completely and get perfect reciprocation, then you must go to that Supreme Person, Krishna. He is the only one who can reciprocate perfectly. Krishna and those who purely represent Krishna. He is the only one who can purely reciprocate your love. So, if we can come to that position of pure loving relationship, then we revive our eternal identity. Jivara svarupa hoy Krishnara nichadas. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. If you can revive that loving relationship with God, with Krishna, then you will no longer see this ocean of birth and death. You will live in transcendental existence for all of eternity, relishing the sweetest pleasure, the ever-increasingly sweet pleasure of bhakti ras. So, how does one enter into that sublime existence? This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Adau garashvayam stad dharma prachcha sadhu marganu gavanam. In the beginning, one should take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, sat dharma prachcha, and inquire from him about dharma, about religious principles. But what do they do nowadays? They go to Guru and they say, oh, I need some money. I have some disease. Gurudev, can you cure me from this disease? They go for everything except for dharma. Rupa Goswami doesn't say sat adharma prachcha. He says sat dharma prachcha. But they go to the guru for everything adharma. You see, instead of going for dharma, they go for adharma. So one has to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and then inquire from him about dharma. Dharma means religion. Religion in Latin, what does religion mean? The word, what is the Latin version, religio? And what does that mean? To relink, just like ligament, relig, relink. One has to relink or relig with the Supreme. This word religion is used very commonly, both by the religionists and the irreligionists. But practically no one understands what is the real meaning of this word religion. They take it as some kind of a sentiment. But that is not religion. Religion is that which relinks you or reconnects you with the Supreme Source of Existence. That is religion. To approach God to fulfill your material desires, my dear God, it's like my parents taught me when I was a little kid. I was about 6 years old or seven. I wanted a pair of cowboy boots for Christmas. So they said, little Stevie, you should pray to God every night, dear God, please give me a pair of cowboy boots for Christmas. My parents wanted to teach me to believe in God, you see. So I did that every night, and sure enough, Christmas morning under the tree, what cowboy boots? You see? Karma boots. So this is not religion, you see. This is not relinking with God. This is relinking with cowboy boots. So, to relink with God, you must have complete surrender. My dear Lord, it's like Christ. Christ is the perfect spiritual master. As he states in the Bible, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. If you think about it, Christ is saying the same exact thing as the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharman Paditya Jamame Kangshadanang Vraja. He's saying the same exact thing from a different perspective, that's all. Krishna is saying, fully surrender to me. Christ is saying, not what I want, but what you want. It's the same exact teaching given in the Bible and in the Gita, you see. But these so-called religionists, they can't understand it. They cannot understand. It doesn't penetrate their brains. Why? Because their brains are clouded by lust. That's why. Their brains are clouded by lust. Kama. Instead of Krishna consciousness or Christ consciousness, they have kama consciousness. And kama consciousness means unconsciousness. They're not conscious. They're not really conscious. They're living in a dream. You see. Walking down Oxford Street. They're living in a dream of material sense gratification. It's very sad. It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. Prabhupada would cry to see how these people are suffering. They were walking in the park in Melbourne the early morning, and all the commuters, they're there in their automobiles going downtown to start their work on Monday morning, you see. Prabhupada is feeling great sympathy for seeing their pitiable position. Pitiable position. So, we are trying to save these poor souls. Trying to save them from their suffering condition. It's actually not difficult to become liberated. It's not difficult. Iha yashya harir dasye karma nama nasa gira. It's not difficult to become liberated. Nikalasvap yavastasu jivan muktasa uchate. Rupa Goswami is saying, it's not difficult to become liberated in any condition. All you have to do is engage in service, devotional service, all you have to do. One of my disciples, he's attending college right now, and it's such an austerity for him. He feels like he's miserable, he can't handle it. But I wrote him, I told him that all you have to do is do this for Krishna. Your spiritual master has asked you to do this, so just do it as service, that's all. Do this as devotional service. Whatever you're doing, do it under the order of your spiritual master as devotional service, and then jivan mukta sa uchate, your liberated soul in any condition, whether you're working a job, whether you're going to school, whether you're a full-time preacher, whatever you may be doing. Simply do everything under the order of the spiritual master, under his to please your spiritual master. Not for your own senses. See, the difficulty is we're trying to please ourselves. That's the big mistake we make. We try to please ourselves. Instead of thinking of pleasing Guru and Krishna, we try to please ourselves, and therefore we can never be happy. Never. Never be happy. But as soon as we kick out this principle of trying to please ourselves and just try to please Guru and Krishna, you see, then jivan mukta sa uchate. In any condition of material life, one becomes liberated soul. So it's not difficult to be a liberated soul. Simply do everything to please Guru and Krishna. Train yourself. Make this affirmation that from now, from this moment forward, let my every thought, my every word, and my every deed be fully pleasing to Guru and Krishna. May I have no other mentality than this. no other words than this, no other actions than this, that my every thought, word, and deed in all times, places, and circumstances may be fully pleasing to Guru and Krishna. It's not an instant thing. You have to desire that. You have to pray for it. You have to beg for that. But if you make that the focus of your life to achieve that state of consciousness, you think Krishna will not reciprocate? Do you think the Paramatma within your heart will not reciprocate with you if you make that endeavor? Krishna will be so happy. Oh, this person's trying to become a pure devotee. Let me give him all help to do this. So in this way, if you make sincere endeavor, all you have to do is make the endeavor to become the pure devotee, fully absorbed in pleasing Guru and Krishna. If you make this your endeavor, then you will get the most wonderful, wonderful reciprocation from Krishna within your heart. Most wonderful reciprocation you will get. So take this pathway very seriously. And you will reap unlimitedly sublime rewards. It is guaranteed. So, now I can ask if there's any questions. Yes?
I read somewhere that if people are suffering in the world, and the rest of the world would consider those people that are suffering innocent people, but according to the Bhagavad Gita, the people that are suffering bring that suffering upon themselves because of karma. Say, for example, people in Africa or Libya or whatever. That doesn't retract, though, from other people helping those people, because it's not the will of God, is it then, to make those people suffer in Africa or people that are fighting against Colonel Gaddafi?
I'm slightly deaf, but I think I've caught the essence of what you were saying. In other words, you're saying, if it's their, let me confirm if I've understood what you're trying to inquire about. If it's all their karma, then why even, just let them, you know, what you can do is it's their karma. So why even try to help them? Is that?
Personally, I think people should help other people. And if they're suffering because of their own karma, then I kind of see it like a battle between God and good spirits and evil and...
What's she saying?
She's trying to find a between good and bad. And evil, and she's saying why the good people have to suffer for the bad karma.
Oh, why the good people? In other words, some good person in Japan? No.
If it's people's karma and they're not innocent, then that's God's will that they should suffer. But then that shouldn't negate us helping those people, should it? We should still help those people. Even though that's
you understand clearly now what she's asking?
Well, those people who are suffering, that's their karma, they are innocent. So should we help them or not? Is that right now?
No. Somebody understand what she's asking?
She's going to get a microphone. But she
can. I can't hear with a microphone either. Do you understand what she's asking?
It's God's will that people are suffering in the world.
No, it's not God's will that anybody is suffering.
Right.
God's will is that everybody is in pure bliss. But we're foolishly saying, God, I don't care what you will, I'm going to do what I will.
Right. So people in Libya that are suffering because of Colonel Gaddafi, we've got to say to them, it's not Colonel Gaddafi that is making them suffer, it's their own karma. Is that the message that we have to give them?
Do we have to give the message to the people who are suffering? It is your karma.
I would not advise to go and say, ha, 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 it's your karma. I wouldn't advise doing that because that's not our mood, first of all. That is not all our mood. A devotee, someone who's actually Krishna conscious, if he's someone who's really Krishna conscious, his heart is bleeding to see people suffering. His heart is bleeding. He, what is that word? He empathizes. He's fully empathic. Empathic, is that? He fully feels their pain. He can't tolerate to see their suffering condition. It tears his heart apart to see people in a suffering condition. He would never say, ha, 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 that's your karma. He would say, "My dear soul, I'm so sorry to see that you're suffering. I want to help you out of this suffering condition." He would do everything he can. That's why giving Krishna consciousness is so important, because you can give somebody temporary relief, and we also do that. We distribute prasadam to people who are hungry. We do that. But if you only feed people and you don't teach them how to get out of the cycle of birth and death, then you haven't really relieved their suffering. You just give them, it's like the example, you may have a painful boil, and if you blow on it, you get relief for a few minutes, but then the pain comes back. So the real sympathy for the suffering people of this world is to teach them how to actually solve all their problems. You see, what we're doing is we're not seeing the real problem, the real suffering condition. We're thinking, oh, this person is suffering because they're poor. This person is suffering because they're diseased. This person is suffering because they don't have decent clothes. This person is suffering for this and that. But we're failing to see the real suffering is this person is under the law of death. First of all, address the supreme suffering condition he's in. Just like if a person comes into a hospital and he's dying from a bullet wound, and he also has some nasal congestion, what would you treat first, the nasal congestion or the bullet wound?
I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but...
Would you give him some drist? You'd say, "Here, take some nasal decongestant, sniff on this, will clear your nasal congestion." Would you do that first, or would you treat his bullet wound first?
Well, it depends where the bullet is, but I think the bullet seems...
He's dying from a bullet wound, and he also has a little nasal congestion. Would you give him the nasal decongestant first? "Oh, my dear sir, I see that your sinuses are stopped up. Here, let me give you some nasal decongestant. Take a deep, inhale it deeply, and we'll get clear your nasals for you." Now, what other... Would you do that, or would you treat his bullet wound? He's dying from a bullet wound. What would you do first?
Bullets.
Okay, very good. Then we're on the same page. Very good. All right. So, in this material world, there's so many little sniffle problems out there that they have. They're short on money. They're short on this. They're short on that. But the real thing is they have a bullet wound. It's called a material body. They have a mortal bullet wound called a material body, and that's dying. Everyone is actually dying right now. You may say, "I'm dying? How can you say I'm dying?" But no, you're actually dying. As soon as you're born, your death is beginning. It's just a gradual unfolding of death, you know, as a death counter. Every one of us has a little death counter. We don't know what the number is, but we all have a death counter, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. When it hits zero, you're finished. So every one of us in this room here, everybody in the whole universe has a death counter right now. And it's clicking away. It's going down to the point of death. So a devotee, he can stop that death counter. He can say, he can put a stop to it. "Okay, we're going to stop your death counter right now. We're going to give you immortality." You see, that's the most important thing. First of all, put a stop to their death counter. And then the other problems, you can do that as well. In the Vedic culture, everyone is well fed. Even the animals are well fed in Vedic culture. The king and the Vedic king make sure every citizen is well fed. There's full employment. Everyone has their economic needs. All those things are done, but that is secondary. The prime thing is stop the death counter. That's the primary thing. So the first business is you stop that person's death. And then once you've done that, then you can see about helping the other problems. Actually, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 9, text number 22, "Ananyaschinti antomang ye janar prayapasate, tesham nichabhyuktanam yogachemam vahamyaham." He says, if you'll worship me with exclusive devotion, then I'll take care of everything you need. All spiritual and material needs, I'll take care of everything. So the fact is, if we can solve the death counter problem by reconnecting ourselves with the supreme source of all existence, who can easily provide every material thing that one could ever need or imagine needing. You see, if we reconnect with that person, then all these other things will be easily done. You see, right now we're experiencing so many problems in the world because we're out of harmony with that supreme source of existence. Why do we have horrible tsunamis, horrible earthquakes? Why are we having all these disasters going on? I saw in the I went to buy some water today in the airport, and it's the newspaper, the news magazine, Newsweek, it said apocalypse. And here we got, you know, earthquakes, tsunamis, revolutions exploding everywhere. And they're wondering, is this the end? No, it's not the end. We got another 427,000 years. And we'll really see apocalypse when Kalki comes in swinging that sword. But the real thing is, if we can just help people to be, first of all, give them Krishna consciousness. Of course, if they're, we'll feed them prasadam first, because then they won't be able to sit down and hear if their bellies are growling. They won't be able to hear the philosophy. So feed them nicely prasadam and put a big smile on their face and then bring them into the... Of course, we have the feast after the lecture, but that's all right, because no one's here starving to death. If you're starving to death, we'll feed you first before the lecture. Anyway, here's another question. Yeah.
The question was: is there a difference between Prince Rama and Rama as figured in the Hare Krishna mantra?
Name Rama is Lord Rama, and the Rama in the Maha Mantra is the same.
The Lord Rama in the Maha Mantra can be taken variously. Can be understood to be Lord Ram, as in Lord Ramachandra. Can also be understood to be Balaram or Parasaram. And actually, it can also be taken as Krishna, because Rama means the supreme enjoyer, and Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So, if the Ram Bhaktas want to take it as Ramachandra, that's very good. They can take Hare as Sita. And that way you feel very happy, and that's bona fide. But you can take it. Prabhupada explains how they can be taken these various ways. But in any case, you're in good shape. Whether you're worshipping Ram, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Balaram, or Parasaram, in either case, you're transcendentally situated. Any other question?
Is pulling more strong to us than the spiritual energy at this moment.
Why
material? Because more people is more responsible at the moment to pay, to work more intensively, to pay everything in house or for children.
Why is it so much, everything's getting more difficult in the material world?
Yes.
Why material energy is more stronger than the spiritual energy and pulling us?
Why the material energy is more powerful than the spiritual energy?
And pulling all the living entity towards material, pay the bills and all that.
Actually, it only appears to be that way. The material energy is always very weak compared to the spiritual energy. If one feels he is being more, or she is being more and more pinched by the material energy, it means they have not gotten a very good connection with the spiritual energy. Therefore, it is advised to chant every day in the morning on Japamala, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Because that material energy that is pinching you, it is a subordinate energy of Krishna. So learn how to connect with Krishna. Maya dakshina prakriti suyate sacharacharam haitananina kunteya jagad viparivartate. That spirit, that material energy will back off when you take shelter of Krishna. That's a fact. We are being tormented by the material energy. As long as we try to enjoy this world, we must be tormented by the material energy. But if you will give up this enjoying spirit and take the spirit of bhakti, then you will see that material energy will become completely subservient to Krishna. It will no longer torture you.
The other question, what is the meaning of Kali Yuga?
Yes. Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. In this age, the material energy does get heavier and heavier. It's a fact. But that is a great blessing because now there's no shade of gray anymore between material life and spiritual life. It's such an extreme age. It's a very good facility, this Kali Yuga. Actually, the great sages worship this is the best of all ages. Because it's very clear distinction between material life and spiritual life now. In former ages, it was not so clear distinction. But now it is very, very clear. In this age, the material life is so bad now. The distinction is more sharp and more clear now in this age.
People are more full of loneliness. I found it in this town especially. You know, in this town, I found many people wherever I go. So many people are suffering of loneliness and mistrust.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Really horrible. The energy is coming darker and darker intense in this town.
We have to save them. It's horrible. It's a fact. It's horrible. It's getting worse and worse. I mean, I just think about it. I grew up in the 50s in the U.S. and it's unbelievable to see the transformation of the American society in over the last 50 years now, 60 years. Unbelievable. We could never dreamed it could be this bad, and this is nothing if you're the way it's going to be in the future. Yeah.
I know this might sound a little bit silly, but if God only wants us to connect on a spiritual level through spiritual energy, why would He create the illusion and create physical energy if He only wanted us to connect?
Yes.
Why would He create the material?
Actually, why does the government build a prison? Because they want there to be criminals? The government think, we want to be a standard country like every other country in the world, so therefore we must build a prison. Because we don't want to be different from the other countries, so we're going to build a prison. Does the government build a prison so they can keep up with the other countries? No. They build a prison to facilitate those people who want to disobey the law, to give them some facility. Instead of just killing them, they get, okay, we'll maintain you here as a prisoner. Because you want it. So that is the kindness of the government, to give a facility for those people who don't want to voluntarily abide by the laws of the state. So, God is not wanting to create such a place as this material world. But because some of the living entities are rebellious, He's obliged to give them some facility. That's all.
So how do you distinguish what material energy is good or bad? Because say, for example, food is material. That's the energy that we get from food. It's not spiritual energy that we're getting through meditation. And yet that is essential for our health. Food is of material energy, but it's actually good. So how do you distinguish and determine material energy that can make us happy and healthy and material energy that actually is against what God would want for us?
So how would you distinguish or discriminate material energy with the spiritual energy? Because material energy, just like food, is required for the body and makes you healthy.
Mm. Yes. Autumn, anything material, if it is engaged in the service of God, then it regains its original spiritual nature, because originally everything is spiritual. Everything is the energy of God, and therefore everything is spiritual energy. But when we take the energy of God and we utilize it selfishly for our own sense gratification, not caring a fig for God, then that becomes material energy. So in that maintain material energy, just like you have to maintain your body, that is all right. Vedic culture means you keep yourself in very good health. That is Vedic teaching. You maintain very good health spiritually and materially. So you feed your body very nicely with Krishna Prasad. That way your material needs become spiritualized. Whatever material need you have, you fulfill that in a spiritual way, and in that way you become a liberated soul. Jivan mukta sa uchite.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think our time has run out, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, our time has run out, but there will be a question and answer session upstairs at what time?
6:15.
So after the feast, come up to the room, and we'll have more questions and answers up there. It'll be interesting, I guarantee you. This philosophy becomes, the more you get into it, the more interesting it becomes. So please come. There's only a limited amount of space in the room, but we'll squeeze in everybody that we can. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. What is it? Anybody, also, if you don't have a chance to ask a question, we do have an e-course called the Ultimate Self-Realization Course, because Krishna Consciousness is the ultimate self-realization system. You can sign up at backtohome, backtohome.com, backtohome.com. And get more of this nectar of Krishna consciousness. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Sankarshan Prabhu, for a very informative lecture. It's good to have you back with us. I'm sure questions and answers.
I'm glad to be back.